When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Lance, your host of yesterday's concert. Before we get this episode started, I want to take 25 seconds to tell you about my other show, Jam Journals. Jam Journals is a podcast that takes you on a journey through music history, featuring live performances from some of the most iconic concerts of all time. Each episode recounts a different concert experience through a dramatic narrative that brings the memories to life with vivid detail and emotion. Join us as we take a trip down memory lane of some of the most unforgettable concerts in recent history. Jam Journals is available everywhere you get podcasts. Yesterday's Concert is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network.
We talk about it like match practice a bit, you know, like we actually reference sport a lot, you know, in what we do, because the COVID thing really obviously took a lot of our match time out, you know. And then when it started up again, it was quite spread out. You might have one gig and another one 3 months later. And it's just hard to sort of just get up and be at that level like a band needs to be. When you go on a tour and it's really like fitness, you know. So I feel like we're also fortunate that we're a band of folks that enjoy being together and enjoy playing music together. There's still a lot of love in the room, and that's a really good thing. So we can enjoy doing it together.
Welcome to Yesterday's Concert, a podcast that celebrates live music. My name is Lance Ingram, and in this episode we talk to Dave Symes, bassist for Boy and Bear. We discuss the band's new self-titled album, including adding more digital elements, plus their value of being collaborative. Grab your earplugs for rock's most consistent band. Dave, how you doing today, man? You doing all right?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thanks. It's a nice, we've kind of had our change of season here in Sydney, Australia. It's gone into the morning sort of frost a little bit, and it's cooled off, and it's got the jumper on now, so it's all a bit different, but no, it's good.
So are y'all heading into winter right now?
Yeah, that's right. So we're the opposite to you guys. So yeah, winter's about the start of June. So yeah, we've got a couple more weeks to go, and then we hit our winter.
Man, that's wild. It's getting like the humidity's hitting like 80% here. It's in like 90s and stuff. Okay. That's wild, man. That's so weird to think about. Just the opposite. Killer.
Where are you based, actually? Which part of the states are you?
I'm in Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis. Yeah, right. Tennessee. Okay, cool. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, Dave, pumped to talk about the new album. But before we do that, let's do a couple icebreakers. Just have some fun. Get to know each other. So my first question for you is, in honor of your new self-titled album, what's your favorite self-titled album?
Oh, gee, that's an amazing question. I don't even know if I know of any self-titled albums. Isn't that classic?
Yes, you do.
Give me a few and I'll tell you if I know them.
Like the Jimi Hendrix Experience, their first album.
There you go. Well, that's probably one of my favorites, actually, because I remember when I started playing music, it was at this party in the neighborhood I was growing up with. I was eight. I was the only kid at the whole party, you know, it was all these adults. And I remember the family was from Northern Europe, like from Denmark, and they used to put on these kind of, you know, wild party. And I guess I was just sort of sitting there, and the lady who owned the house took me into her son's bedroom, and her son was much older. He had left home years before. And she pulled out this little guitar and said, oh, yeah, why don't you have a go on this? And his room was full. So she kept his room sort of still the same, even though he was probably in his 30s or something. And it was all Jimi Hendrix paraphernalia and stuff everywhere. That was my introduction to Jimmy, and was playing this guitar in this guy's bedroom with all this, I guess, posters on the wall and whatnot. And not long after that, I started listening to, you know, the Experience and his records and stuff. So I'm going to have to vote for that. Isn't it funny? My mind went blank then when you said it, and I thought, oh, I hadn't even thought about it. Yeah, self-titled records. Who else has done one? But yeah, there you go. That's a nice memory for me. Yeah.
Nice. I love it. Thanks for sharing, man. So in your opinion, when it comes to your bass rig, what do you consider your secret weapon?
Wow, that's a cool question too. Just recently, I've always been pretty neutral, actually, in terms of, like, you know, I come from like a jazz and soul funk background in terms of my development as an electric bass player. and then moving into multiple genres. But from that, I guess I took, like, I've just got a bass that I've got set up the way I like to play it, and I've got the Ampeg bass rig, and I thump it out. But in more recent times, I got onto something by an Italian luthier and builder who builds pedals and things and amps. He's called Jad Freer, and he's from Italy, and he's got this thing called the Capo, which has become my my live pedal, which is a DI preamp saturator kind of thing. And I mean, it's been amazing in the studio too, to be honest. It's a studio quality tool, but I've been using that live, and it's been really great.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Okay, so next question. I know you guys are an Australian band, but what's an American city that you love to play?
Oh, yeah, cool. Man, what I love about America actually is the differences, you know. So, like, because, you know, we come in often and we spend a month there doing shows, and it's amazing when you get to sort of do the full circle, you know. Not that we've been everywhere, because it's a massive place. But there's something really special to me, that whole kind of West Coast. Once we sort of start from Vancouver in Canada and get all the way down to San Diego, you know, there's something geographically amazing about all of that. But then if I think about city to actually play concertine or something like that, there's something I've got a real fondness for New Orleans. And we've only ever really played it once, but I've been there myself many other times. And I just feel like that's just like this musical hub of a city, of just like the vibe of live music there is sort of insane. And there's a lot of great venues out of the main downtown, you know, French Quarter and all that. You know, once you get out a bit, I've just been to some amazing shows down there. So yeah, I'd love to play New Orleans again. And actually, yeah.
That's really cool. Since I'm just down the road from New Orleans, it's only like a 6-hour drive for us. I've been a fair amount of times. And I mean,
did you go to Jazz Fest this year or?
It's been on my bucket list, and I had the Stones were supposed to play it several years back, and I had a ticket, and then they canceled, and then they rescheduled, and then they canceled. And so I haven't made it to Jazz Fest, but I did see Kiss on Halloween night in New Orleans, and was a blast. Yeah, wow. Like, it was just, the freaks were fully out that night, and it was really cool. Yeah, really cool night.
What I loved about Jazz Fest was it's not so much the festival in terms of the outdoor bit. I mean, that's great, but I don't know if it's still the same, but that all kind of finishes by 6 or 7 o'clock, and then the city becomes the festival, and there's like every venue has music on all night, and that's often where you're kind of getting all the great gigs, you know?
Yeah. Did you guys play Jazz Fest, or did you just attend?
We actually didn't play Jazz Fest. No, I just attended a couple of times, actually, just as a music fan. I took myself to New Orleans. I actually met a bass player who came to Australia a couple of times, and we became mates. So I sort of took myself to New Orleans, like, I don't know, probably half a dozen times, and just stay with him and just sort of check it out. And yeah, it's just a bit of a musical pilgrimage, you know?
Yeah. No, that's killer, man. Well, that's killer. Well, last question, and then we'll jump more into the conversation. So, like I've said, you guys are Australian, but I want to know, all my favorite bands seem to come from Australia. What's in the water down there that's making all this good music? Like, what's happening down there, man?
That's really cool to hear. You know, I feel like our scene is really strong, actually. I mean, we're a small country. We're a long way. We're a hell of a long way from you guys and from, you know, the UK and Europe. Maybe one thing that I think is like a point of difference maybe is that our influences are everything in a way, you know. So it's like we grow up and whatever sort of has dripped in here, like it's equal parts, you know. So I feel like me as a musician and us as a band, Boy and Bear, like, there's as much American inspiration and influence as there is European, as there is whatever's sort of come out of here locally, you know. And I feel like there's a real melting pot of all that. And I feel like we've dealt with that in a way that's become like sort of made our own sound, you know what I mean? Whereas I feel like if you grow up in the UK or America, it's kind of, there's enough going on. You could just sort of, you know, be in that one world a bit. I'm not saying that's what actually people do, but I feel like over here, it's kind of a little bit more, dip your toe into lots of different things along the way. Even just as a musician, you know, you as a player, you know, you actually have the opportunity to sort of be putting on a different pair of shoes every night and playing all multiple styles of music, because you sort of need to do that to sort of, like, you know, get by as well. You know what I mean? You can't just sort of be the rock guy that just, you know, has, okay, there's 100 rock bands you can go and play with. You know, I'm talking about when you're getting started, you know what I mean? You tend to play different things. So maybe there's something in that, you know.
Is that why King Gizzard has an album in basically every single genre man made ever possible? Well, like,
I don't know those guys personally. I mean, I work with people that work with them and stuff like that. So I hear stories. They're a fascinating group of musicians and band, aren't they? I mean, just the amount of the volume of material they put out and the different styles and all that. Like, it's pretty wild, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's like, they are my favorite band right now. And I've traveled awesome. The country to see them a couple of times. And that's, I mean, it really, I think that was the bridge for me to crossing over to that top spot of my fandom was just, they're so prolific in what they do. And it's just really, they are one of the more fascinating bands on the scene today, just because of what their output is. And it's just, you don't see bands doing stuff like that.
Yeah, 100%.
And so I was curious if you knew what was in the water that was making them do all that. And if y'all were sipping on that too or something, it's wild down there, man. So, I mean, but speaking of albums, tell me about, I want to start with a really broad question to start. With your new album, your new self-titled album, when and where did you guys write and record that album?
Yeah, totally. So we started writing that record and COVID hit because we were put out another record at the end of 2019 and we hit the road a little bit. We were in America and then we were in Europe and then it all got shut down. We kind of were like, felt like we were like a week ahead of the virus in Europe. Like I think we were in Milan and then the next day Italy shut its border and we were kind of just like, it was like we were running away from the tornado that we didn't really understand anything about at that point. So yeah, we all ended up back in Australia and we just, I guess, started kicking some new songs around, you know, like we started kicking some ideas around and it didn't take long before the five of us just sort of, I guess, naturally just fell into this, okay, we're actually going to start writing a new record or writing new music, you know. And so because of the whole isolation thing, everyone having to isolate with COVID, we did adopt some new ways of writing it and we started sending, you know, we had a big folder, online folder thing that we were just updating. And little ideas would get sent around from one person and someone else would work on it and then someone would send something else. And we sort of just, you know, there was no pressure to write, but I think we all started just moving to that zone. And then when we could finally get together again, we started fleshing those ideas out, you know, as the whole band in a room and playing songs and things. And there was talk to come back to America to make the record. We really enjoyed the record we'd made previously. We did in Nashville, actually, which is also another great city to play music in. And we were going to come back. Maybe we weren't going to go to Nashville, but the engineer we had worked with there was suggesting a really cool studio out of LA up called Sonic Ranch, which was super inspiring too, if we could have gone there. But just the COVID thing, it just wasn't happening. I mean, we Australia's border didn't really open for quite a long time. And so we decided just to make it in Sydney. So we worked with a guy called Simon Berkelman, who runs a really cool studio in Sydney called Golden Retriever. And it's right next to where we have our own little writing room and rehearsal room and all our gear. So it was super, super local. Like you sort of just, you know, go from one building to the other. And we ended up making it there over a few recording blocks. And we did some stuff in our little room as well. But we did mix it mainly with Craig Sylvie in London, who you would know some of his work like from Arcade Fire and different bands. He's from San Francisco actually, but he's lived in London for 20 years. There was Tom Elmhurst did mix a song early on, and Colin Dupuis also did mix one song, but the rest of it was all with Craig Sylvie. Yeah,
that's cool. And that's, I mean, one of the things that I've read about and I wanted to kind of get your take on it was there's more digital elements in this album than some of the previous ones. And it seems like that started initially as kind of a requirement of the pandemic because of the separation, but you seems like you adopted it pretty well, like even once y'all kind of got back together. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So I guess like on the record previously, we'd actually had the synths, you know, the keyboard electronic world had started to sort of expand. And we actually, in our writing, had sort of gone into the electronic percussion world a bit. But when we made that previous record, we decided not to do electronic percussion, but we made some loopy stuff out of acoustic instruments and did that. On this current record, the keyboard world's expanded even more, like the synthesizer world from John, our keyboard player. He really kind of got really into some new keyboards and really expanding his vocabulary there. We were gravitating towards that sound world as a palette for harmony. And from the percussion point of view, like I really feel like it's always live drums as well, but then we have this element. I'm really into making loops as a bunch of the guys are, but I made a bunch of loops on a couple of the early sketches, which we ended up keeping once we all got together because they, you know, they felt good and we decided to embrace, let's blend this world of electronic loops and real drums as part of the core sound on about maybe six of the tracks. Anyway, it's not every song, but we think of it like an electronic percussionist. You know, it's like it's like there's a percussionist in the band now that's playing electronic sounds, and it really worked. And Tim, our drummer, and Killian, our guitar player, often took some of those initial ideas and would flesh them out with building new sounds for what we had sort of done in the early demos and whatnot. But I think it just sort of encouraged us to stick to that, because that's what we wanted to do on this previous record, but we shied away from it a bit. This time we had the confidence, no, I think we can make this work. And it's working live for us too. It's not like something we don't play with track, or we don't need to have that element in live necessarily. Like, we kind of maybe just have a couple of sounds on a pad or something, but I don't know. It's just sort of like, it just creates like an energy.
Why'd you guys shy away from it on the Suck on Light album?
The engineer we were working with, I mean, it was cool. He was like, oh, let's make our own electronic sounds by, so we often did things like we would treat other skinned instruments with tape and with towels and whatnot and record sounds. And then we would make that into a, so in a way we kind of did do it. But their source was more organic sounding rather than actually be a digital sound. So that was cool on Suck on Light, because it was like, oh, we actually just built our own samples of sounds. But this time I think we wanted to sort of stick to it being a little bit more, I guess, a bit more focused. And no, we wanted to have that electronic sound, you know, for this intro of this song or this chorus or whatnot. We actually wanted to have that element.
So since you were leaning more into these digital sounds, like the synths and the electronic percussion, were those musicians in the band leading the progress and development of this album more so than maybe like Harlequin Dream or something like that?
No, not necessarily, because it's a real collaborative band. So often any of these ideas might start from any of the five of us. So it's kind of like an open canvas like that. And then all of us craft it towards the end of like producing the sound and whatnot. And then we do go into our corners where it's like, okay, yeah, I play the bass and I'm going to play the bass now. But like from the start point, it's very much like, yeah. So, you know, like I might have created the first loop, Tim might do something. Like, you know, yeah, sort of like it's really spread around, actually.
Well, I wanted to ask too, like Moonfire had a 10th anniversary kind of right before y'all started writing this. So I know y'all did some stuff to celebrate that. Did that have any influence on going into writing this album?
I don't know if it had influence, but I feel like it was like at first, you know, being an anniversary and actually like stepping. So we were kind of already writing when this happened. I was actually at first from a headspace, it was actually tricky to go, oh, how do we now go? And because we did a concert here in Sydney, just one, where we played that record and celebrated it. And so you have to rehearse old songs and do all that. And I think there was at first was a bit of nervousness. Oh, how are we going to sort of flip our musical mind to go back, you know, because we're writing all this new stuff. So in a way it was actually really refreshing, because it was kind of like it came together really easily in the audio. It was a great concert. And I think it was nice to kind of like actually maybe revisit some of those roots and present them with fresh approach. You know, as much as we played the record, we still played like the band sounds now 10 years on, you know, the band's developed and the band performs differently. I think it gave us a boost of like enthusiasm just for music, you know, actually, which was cool. And also probably the confidence of what we were writing for this new record and how we were recording. It's sort of, we're really feeling strong about the new batch of songs and stuff.
My approach to listening to the new album was I listened to an old album, then I would listen to the new album, then I would listen to an old album.
Yeah, right.
And so I went back and forth between... Because I felt like it would kind of, I hate to compare albums, but it just to kind of put a frame of reference around it just as well. Because I mean, my thing is when I listen to you guys, it's so consistent album to album to album. And so that's my question is like, what have you learned in creating the four albums that's led to this kind of consistency?
I think for every record, like definitely the discussions we have afterwards, you know, like with sometimes... not immediately after, but once we're then out touring on that cycle of that record or whatever, yeah, the conversations do start about what was really great about what we experienced there, or what was something we maybe want to tweak next time, you know, like that kind of classic thing of, okay, now we want to sort of like the electronic thing on this record, like explore that further for the next record, or what really worked on the last one. The consistency, I think, though, is that nothing's radically that different in terms of it's not all of a sudden like, you know, this, our new record isn't all of a sudden us now up there like the electronic element is actually quite small in a way. It's still, there's a drum kit, there's electric bass, there's piano sounds, there's acoustic guitar, electric guitar leads and harmonies and vocals. So that's still there across all records in the forefront. And the other elements get added and the songwriting changes, but there still is a lot of crossover from each record. Maybe that's the consistency part. I think, you know, we are very much a live band. Like, we still get up on stage and play. We don't ever put track on or whatever like that. It's kind of like, it is just the five of us playing. And so as a band, you do actually evolve, don't you? And you kind of get better, you know, you get better at playing together. Like, you're just your communication, and you live in each other's pockets, and you play in the pocket with each other, and that kind of develops. But maybe that consistency is there from the beginning, you know, and maybe that's something you've sort of heard between the records.
Well, that was one of my questions, was how has longevity played into remaining consistent over the years? I mean, aside from that little gap that y'all had for a break, y'all have been together for a while and playing together for a band. I mean, as a band for a while, there has to be a level of comfort, like you said, into playing together that you wouldn't get if you were just playing in a 2-year-old band or whatever it is.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, you know, we talk about it like match practice a bit, you know, like we actually reference sport a lot, you know, in what we do, because the COVID thing really obviously took a lot of our match time out, you know. And then when it started up again, it was quite spread out. You might have one gig and another one 3 months later. And it's actually hard to sort of just get up and be at that level. Like, a band needs to be, when you go on a tour and you know, you're sort of like 3 shows in and you just start to feel like, wow, we're really going up a gear now, you know, and then you get a week in or whatever, and 2 weeks and months in. It's really like fitness, you know. So I feel like we're also fortunate that we're a band of folks that enjoy being together and enjoy playing music together. There's still a lot of love in the room, and that's a really good thing. So we can enjoy doing it together. But definitely, I definitely think there's nothing better than putting a bunch of dates in the book and getting out and playing. And every time you spread that out, it takes a bit to get going again. Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, with your last album, that was coming out of what, a 4-year break for you guys?
Yeah, maybe that's right. Yeah, 3.5-4 years. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So how much of that, like, did it provide like a sense of renewal in the band? Like, I mean, when you got back together, it was like coming back together with family.
Oh, it was when we finally got it to the stage of, okay, we're going to put another record and we're going to get out there. It was a sense of like joy and relief, you know, because I think there was a bit of no man's land there for a while. And it wasn't really necessarily a break. I guess there was a couple of things that needed to get sorted out for Dave Hosking, our singer. He just had he had some health stuff he was sort of dealing with. But we did start writing anyway, like during that. So we were still doing things. Wasn't a clear break, but at the same time, yeah, it wasn't like our vision wasn't as clear as it had been previously. So that made a few of us a bit nervous too. Are we going to do this again? Are we doing it this year or next year? Like, we wanted to know. But yeah, it was definitely a relief once we got going again. And it felt great, yeah, getting everyone back together and actually going, cool, we've got a date in the book to go and record, and we've got some shows we're going to book in.
Well, and I mean, I know this is the kind of the second album coming back from that. You did have the break from the pandemic where you guys were separated. And I know you're not the lyricist, but, and maybe I'm reading too much into the lyrics, but some of the songs on the new album, like Just to Be Kind, Apex, and Hostage, to me, my interpretation of the lyrics was like, this is a love letter to the band itself, it seems like. It kind of seems like they work on a simultaneous level. I mean, is that something y'all acknowledge, or am I just making something up?
I mean, that's great. I mean, I think, like, you know, lyrically, we all kind of take our interpretations how we do, you know, as individuals, like as listeners. That's a nice thing about poetry and music. I think it can really kind of mean different things. But there's definitely a sense of optimism throughout the whole record lyrically. Dave Hosking, our singer, has been fascinated by the fragile nature of our own mind, but also what we're capable of, you know. And so, in his own words, you know, he would say there is love songs, but there is songs of struggle, and there's also songs of celebration, you know. So it's, yeah, maybe what you said, there's some celebration and love songs in there, as well as, you know, maybe also talking about some certain struggles, you know, to get to those points.
Given, like we've said, the longevity of your band, as well as just kind of the ups and downs and ebbs and flows of being a unit, how has that affected your previous work within the band? Like, with this new album coming out in a couple of weeks at the time of the recording, how do you look back on your old works now, knowing everything that you know, with this new album?
Yeah, as an artist, I think we look back and we kind of critique the things that we feel that we didn't quite get there. But we do, I think, celebrate the wins too. We kind of are proud of the things that we like about each record, or proud of the feedback we get from different people as they talk about it. But we do talk about every record and every recording experience critically. No, like we kind of do break them down. You know what I mean? Like, and as a way forward, as going, well, maybe we didn't get that thing right, but what we got from that was that experience. And that's the thing, at the time, you know, we were in the moment and we were trying that, or we were learning. And I think we've learned from every record and we've matured from every recording experience. And I don't think that'll ever change. You know, I think if I had this chat with you in a year's time, like the record we're about to put out, I have a couple of things in my mind about, maybe I wouldn't do that this time, you know? And I think that's how you always push forward for that's what drives you to do another record, you know?
No, yeah, that's great. And that's, how do you balance challenging yourself and learning from the previous album versus appeasing the fans? Because, I mean, you have a dedicated fan base and you want to make sure they enjoy and love what you put out, but as an artist, you have to challenge yourself or else you're just stagnant.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's something that we don't think about that much. I feel like we just kind of create the music that we create, and maybe like it's not that drastically out of character what we're creating with these changes, you know, so hopefully the audience just sort of comes along with us. But I think if you're trying to sort of think about that too much, it can become a bit stagnant maybe, or maybe stops you in your growth. And I feel like a song that you're proud of and a performance that you're proud of is probably just one that's straight from the heart in general, isn't it? One that you sort of, you don't have those boundaries. But in saying that, yeah, it's not like we're really reinventing the wheel here in what we do. Like, I think we've got our genre that we've kind of been in a way. I think it's crafted by our individual performing styles and the sounds that we create. Like, it's still there's these threads across the records that, you know what I mean? Like the sound of Dave singing and his kind of the lyrical style to the way that the band and the instruments interact with that, and counter melodies that we create or grooves. Like there's an evolution there, but it feels like the threads there between each one.
Well, like we talk about these digital elements that are more prominent on this album than previous ones, but you know, like I said, in the way that I approach listening to this album and as well as your previous discography, you could have placed this album anywhere within your discography and I would have said, yeah, it came out that year. It would not have surprised me. I mean, it very is much linear with any point in your band. And that's what I mean by the consistency. It's like,
yeah,
you are a consistent band in what you put out, in that it's all very great material, but it does really seem to kind of just, y'all have locked into this niche and y'all are doing it well.
That's great, Lance. Cheers. And I think maybe like, there's a little bit of every record in every record. Maybe that's part of that consistency too. I don't think, yeah, I feel like the good bits of each record kind of, when I say good bits, the bits that we still gravitate towards get threaded through to the next one and something else maybe gets developed. But there's definitely, there's a lot of crossover there.
Well, and I mean, that in and of itself is just growth as an artist. You're talking about that. Like, I mean, you're pulling from each album to kind of work on yourself in that, and to say like, this is what I really value about myself on this album, and you take that to the next album, it seems like.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's definitely something that we do, you know, collectively, definitely.
Okay, as we kind of start to wrap up, my last question is, what's been your strongest lasting value as a band, in your opinion?
I feel like it's collaboration. The five of us collaborate on every aspect of what we do as a band. So we collaborate on the songwriting, we collaborate on the recording, we collaborate on the vision for the product we're creating, like the artwork and whatnot. We collaborate on the live show, and then we collaborate on the storytelling of the music and the interviews, and we collaborate on the business. So we collaborate on that side of it. So now I feel like collaboration is the fact that we are collaborating in a way that's so equal and considerate of each other. I feel like as a band, that's what's giving us longevity of looking at a career that's now kind of 12 years in or whatever, as well as a vision for the band to be doing this for the next 20.
Yeah.
You know?
Was that how you approached forming the band? Was with that kind of open collaboration? Has that always been the ideal?
I think it's developed along the way to be more and more of that, to the point now where it's kind of, yeah, it is sort of super, just really equal like that. So I think that developed through experiencing each other and experiencing the music industry, because it can go a few different ways in this industry. And there's a few examples out there where it's not as busy is the way that we tend to do it, if you know what I mean. It can get a bit tricky to navigate the world of it. So I think that's a strength for us for sure.
Well, I mean, it seems like too, with the closeness that you have, as you describe as having in the band, it seems like that really takes that the extra mile for you guys to have that, to be so friendly and everything.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, you've got each other's back along the way, you know, everyone looks out for each other and you have your strengths and weaknesses along the way. And it's nice to be able to, you know, it's like once again, referencing sport, it's like a team. It's like you've got to play to your weakest player or whatever they say, you know?
Yeah. Well, your new album's coming out May 26th. And I just want to say, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it's a fantastic album. I love the lineage of the band and where it's come from and where you are with this new album. And I look forward to the next 5 albums that you guys put out. But I just want to say, I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today, man.
Yeah, thanks, Lance. Well, we'll straight back at you, mate. Appreciate you taking the time to listen to our music and to talk about it with me and on behalf of the whole band. Yeah, we're looking forward to letting people hear it.
I'm Lance Ingram, and this is Yesterday's Concert. Thanks for listening to another episode of my show. For more live music podcasting, check out our other show, Jam Journals. If you're feeling kind, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and check us out on all the social media platforms. Email us at info@yesterdaysconcert.com or visit our website, yesterdaysconcert.com. So until next time, give us a subscribe, tell your friends, and most importantly, take care of your shoes.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.